information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight we care.
Appear to border
it shows.
On
the law.
The country.
You will remember nine you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go up with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Being lied to by
the government, they were innocent. They have no idea what they're up against.
We're trying to record it as quickly as possible and do the analysis later. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 179 of Media Monarchy. It's July 23rd, 2010. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies and cover-ups, pot factories, cartels and curious dynamics, competing currencies and scary graphs, whistleblowers, puppets, pullouts and deadlines, top secret America, toxicity and scenarios, future pixels, Boho Grove, and the wooden world trade ship. All that, so much more, right here, July 23rd, 2010, episode 179 of MediaMonarchy.com.
I'm a scary gargoyle on a tower that you made with plastic power. Your rhinestone eyes are like factories far away. Where the paralytic dreams that we all seem to keep drive on engines till they weep with future pixels in factories far away. So call the mainland from the beach. Your pod is now washed up in bleach. The waves are rising for this time of year. And nobody knows what to do with the heat under sunshine. Pylons will meet while rain is falling like grindstones from the sky. Clinging to the atoms of rock, seasons, the adjustments, signs of change. I can see now, she said, taxi. Now that light is all I can see. This dawn brings strange loyalties and skies. I'm a scary gargoyle on a tower that you made with plastic power. Your rhinestone eyes are like factories far away. Same time every day, same routine. Clear target in summer, and skies are blue. It's part of the noise when winter comes. It reverberates in my lungs. Nature's corrupted, in factories far away. Your love's like rhinestones falling from the sky. Far away.
future, pixels in factories far away. Still more new music, my friends, from the latest album by Gorillaz. It's called Plastic Beach. It just keeps growing on me. I think it is a very of-the-time record in the themes and memes that it discusses. So, there it is. And here we are. Welcome, wherever you are, however you are, whenever you are in the world. This is the 179th episode of Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, as well as CyberspaceWar.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, and now NewWorldNextWeek.com. The feed for the high-quality videos that I do every week with CorbettReport.com. Spreading out all through the alternative media. And we are live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time here in Portland, Oregon, on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And a huge thanks to the stations that rebroadcast Media Monarchy, especially our live affiliates, ZeroPointRadio.com, blasting out live worldwide, as well as in Casper, Wyoming, on 92.3 FM and 1670 AM, as well as the worldwide home of free speech down in Florida, blasting worldwide, revereradio.net. And as always, thanks to 98.5 FM in Olympia, Washington, Free Radio Olympia, frolympia.org, berkeleyliberationradio.net, 104.1 FM in Berkeley, California, 90.7 FM KWMD in Kusilov, Alaska, thanks to OneSkyRadio.com and all the others. I appreciate it. And again, get the episodes, replay them. You don't have to ask. Spread the information. Information wants to be free. It's all open source intelligence. It's all fair use. It's all for the taking and giving and sharing. Radio23.org supplies the high-quality versions of Media Monarchy. So if you are replaying a show or want to spread it, the higher quality sounds a little better. And you can, of course, get in touch, make contact, spread the word, make connections. Facebook.com/Media Monarchy as well. All the others with Media Monarchy as either the username or the keyword or the .com/Media Monarchy. Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Ustream.tv/Media Monarchy, Blip, Cafe Press, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, Archive.org. Huge thanks to all the folks who do send news tips and get in touch with me on trying to help run this monarchy, one-man band kingdom. So I apologize to the folks that I don't get back to. I can't get back to everybody, but all the feedback, all the contacts are appreciated. And again, I haven't forgotten them. I'm lining them up. So when we can start to move ahead on some of these things, whether that's graphic design or banners or buttons or web work or anything to help MediaMonarchy.com grow, again, you can also donate. You can see the PayPal button there. $10 donation gets you the exclusive DVD from Richard Grove and TragedyandHope.com. It's called 2020 Hindsight, Censorship on the Front Line, fully explaining what we see going on all around us. And we always like to look at the breaking news as we come to you on this 23 of July, 2010. Oil rig alarm was not fully turned on, a worker says. This story bubbling up, if you will. Emergency alarm on the Deepwater Horizon was not fully activated on the day the oil rig caught fire and exploded, triggering the utter catastrophe we have around us right now. Seven banks fail Europe's stress test. That would be Trichet's of the European Central Bank. Again, a new financial world order is being set up as they perform a controlled demolition of the economy that's built on fiat currency and zeros and ones and derivatives. They've bought up the resources and sell us back the simulation, the fake, the simulacra, if I'm using that correctly, with apologies to Baudrillard. North Korea makes a threat on eve of military drills. We say this time and time again, every element is really connected, and every element, as it seems, things are accelerating at an unreasonable pace. Everything seems to be a powder keg. War games, stress tests, and alarms not being fully turned on. Now, as we go through all this news on this massive episode 179 of Media Monarchy, we, of course, are going to refer to some of these things we've mentioned. And again, ultimately, that's the mission statement. It's open source. It's fair use. We share this information while we still have a free and open web. We were discussing on the previous episode, 178B, of course, all the threatiganda, all the talk about a cyber 9/11, an I-9/11, which, of course, they'll be more than ready to shove an I-Patriot Act down our throats. So as long as we have all these tools and bells and whistles and tweets and so on and so forth, let's use them in the most effective way I think that we can. And yes, we can still have fun and we can do all the other things. But it's going to come back more to your community. And we talked about community food. We talked about competing currencies. All these things are the themes and memes and in the zeitgeist that surrounds us, that we're soaking in it, if you will. But let's cut the chit-chat and get to our number one story of the week. We did cover this on the latest episode from NewWorldNextWeek.com. Oakland marijuana law passes. Pot factories coming to the Bay Area. This from San Francisco Weekly, but we've got more links to the Mercury News and the New York Daily News and all around the world. The Oakland City Council approved an ordinance allowing industrial-scale marijuana growing operations to set up shop in town, supplying the city's medical pot dispensaries. The measure is expected by some estimates to generate up to $2 million in tax revenue for the cash-strapped city, yet not everyone is celebrating. Only one council member, Nancy Nadell, voted against the ordinance and two abstained. In a curious dynamic that has been playing out since Oakland first began mulling whether to allow pot factories within city limits, a number of small-time growers strongly opposed the measure, arguing it would drive down the price of weed. Now, don't get too excited, folks, because the permits for these large-scale operations won't be issued until January 2011. But they're arguing it's going to drive down the price and dilute its quality. Set against those silly criticisms were concerns that small-time grow operations, quote, have led to public safety hazards, including fires, burglaries, and home invasions, health risks to patients, and related response costs to the city, according to a report from council members Larry Reed and Rebecca Kaplan. One study commissioned by AgriMed, a company that wants to develop one of the pot warehouses, also estimated that the law will create 350 union jobs. This does, of course, all sound well and good. One commenter, I believe, on the New World Next Week YouTube mentioned that, you know, these public safety hazards that occur are mostly thanks to the thugs busting down the doors on the wrong houses and terrorizing people for what essentially is a plant. And again, we're going to get further into this after the clip that's really going to get into it. Of course, this new guy, Dylan Radigan, seems to be a great new truth teller. And again, we see these folks pop up in the corporate-controlled mainstream media, and they do report good things, and they kind of lead you along. But again, we're not playing follow the leader on any level here. That's why we use the open-source intelligence to pick and choose, to make better choices, to not fall in lockstep behind anything. And don't take what I say for gospel. I've laid it all out on the website. You can check it out. The thugs cause the public safety hazards. And of course, Oakland being the city that just had riots after another murdering cop was just got manslaughter. And of course, they're now not going to respond to any sorts of crime. So all these things are going on in Oakland, swirling around these new pot factories. And we've hit those stories in the past. So before we return and flesh this out even more. Let's get into this clip on the Oakland marijuana laws and the coming pot factories.
With the budding business of marijuana and a decision that some say could turn Oakland into the Silicon Valley of pot. Last night, Oakland becoming the first city to authorize industrial-scale farms to grow medical marijuana. Starting next year, the city will issue 4 permits to massive pot factories, which could be as large as 100,000 square feet. That is about 2 football fields each worth of marijuana, all of it within Oakland city limits. Supporters say it'll create jobs and generate tax revenues for the Northern California city, but small growers who currently supply weed to Oakland's medical marijuana clinics worry they'll be squeezed out by the big guys. Kind of like a Walmartization, if you will, of the weed business in California. So the big question today is pot farming going corporate? Who will become the Ernst and Julio Gallo of the marijuana industry? And what kind of a country has legalized corporate pot farming in one state and a year in jail in another? Joining us now, founder and president of AgriMed, Jeff Wilcox. He's hoping to get a permit for one of these massive marijuana fields in Oakland. Before we get into the details of this, Jeff, what is your view on the push towards the lifting of the prohibition and all the rest of it in California when it comes to marijuana?
I think it's a very exciting time in California. I also work with Richard Lee on Prop 19 on the passage of that.
And why? Can you elaborate on what you think is so exciting about the move towards the end of prohibition of marijuana in California?
Well, I lived in Europe for a while, and they've taken a different approach towards what I consider soft drugs. Cannabis is in our community. It's estimated that 100,000 Americans have tried it out of 300,000, one in three, and 17% are regular users. So in my case, this seems like to be the elephant in the room, so to say. So I encourage a conversation to say, can we legalize this? Can we tax it? And can we make these jobs out of this?
What did you think when you saw the response, particularly from the smaller marijuana growers saying, hang on a second here, these giant pot farms are going to put us out of business?
I thought it was a good, healthy dialogue, but you have to look at the idea is not to put them out of business. You have to look at the liquor industry and maybe the wine industry. You can get a bottle of wine for $6, $10. You can get a bottle of wine for $150. You'll have the same stagnation of price in this. You'll have your artesian growers that can grow the best stuff, and you'll have the big gallows that'll produce, instead of a $400 an ounce, we can produce it probably $40 an ounce for people.
Is the end game Philip Morris? In other words, even somebody like you get blown out by a massive corporate grower.
No, the end game, Oakland took a real chance last night. They took a first mover position in this. So the end game is really to open this up to everybody. This is a social entrepreneur's dream, I guess you can say. So it's bigger than just getting rich. It's really how do we change the laws and legalize
them. And you're looking at marijuana farming and marijuana selling and all the rest of it basically through the lens of a wine culture or a vineyard culture. Is that fair?
If you look at the liquor industry, it's stagnated. You have manufacturers, distribution, retail sales. Cannabis will take the same format. What we're looking at, what I was interested in, is the beginning. How do you manufacture and distribute? Cultivation is also part of manufacturing. So right now you have an unregulated industry. That was a real issue.
Speaking of an unregulated industry, might I remind you that it's not only an unregulated industry, that it is illegal in the vast majority of this country to possess, sell, consume marijuana.
Correct.
It is not illegal to consume red wine, for instance. So we can talk all day about the vineyard culture and the marijuana, the artisanal marijuana and the Ernest and Julio Gallo marijuana. But as somebody who's trying to develop this business, how worried are you that the federal government will not only take all of your resources, but put you in jail?
That's always a concern, but I have to ask you another question. Why is it illegal? Under whose laws?
The federal government.
In Nevada, in the federal government. So why don't we have gambling and prostitution here? Because it's illegal under state laws. So there's an issue of federalism and who takes precedence. And our intent
clearly
is to follow the medical cannabis laws. Yes, our intent is to always follow the medical cannabis laws in the state of California.
I understand that, and I can see that it's actually advanced to the point that we're having this conversation on MSNBC in the afternoon about marijuana farms in Northern California. But
yes,
we also see the marijuana retail outlets explode in places like Los Angeles, where all of a sudden there's five marijuana dispensaries for every Starbucks in Southern California, and then the feds will come in and shut it down. I don't understand. Are you anxious as a businessman to invest in the development of this business, however far ahead of the curve Oakland may be, because of the issue between states' rights and the federal government that could easily come back to bite you?
They could easily come back to bite me, but we could be on the cutting edge also.
In other words, you're up for the fight.
I think they declared a war on drugs. We'd like to have a peace. But if they need a fight, we have to do it through legislation and things like this.
Obviously, you think marijuana should be legal in all 50 states, or am I jumping to a conclusion?
I think that's a good conclusion, yes.
Okay. All right, listen, Jeff, keep us posted. It's been an interesting period of time in this country because of the disparity from one state to another. A wine culture emerges potentially around marijuana in California, I can get you a year in jail here in New York. Jeff Wilcox, aspiring...
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank
you.
Jeff Wilcox, aspiring marijuana farmer.
That somewhat awkward interview, I think, did flesh out a lot of good points and questions about this whole issue. And again, all these things are all linked up on MediaMonarchy.com. Oakland marijuana law passes, pod factories coming to the Bay Area. But I referenced on the show a few times, and I wasn't sure, so I just hopped over to Facebook.com/Media Monarchy and asked my man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. I had heard him mention it before, but he had a take on this growing legalization push. So Clyde Lewis, as well as TracyTwyman.com, I think broke it down pretty well. And Tracy notes, no, they're going to try to get you to buy it from the cigarette corporations at inflated prices with tax stamps on every pack, and it'll be all gross and flaky, reconstituted with special chemicals to make you addicted and make it burn faster. They're not going to give you anything. Just keep on taking. The problem is that because anyone can grow it, they can't control the market, and they think this will make it easier for them to do that, and they'll get a higher cut of the profit. That's the problem with the medical and tax and regulate approaches. By supporting that, we're giving in to the notion that this is a dangerous substance that needs special regulations, and that we don't just have the freedom to choose what we want to consume. That, again, according to natural law, would say it's a plant that grows here. And Clyde's take is that they're going to legalize pot and first sell it at liquor stores and pharmacies, but they're going to take away more and more natural medicines and or highly regulate them, Codex Alimentarius. Some of the other drug war updates under this Oakland story, how legalized pot could hurt Mexico's cartel. Now, this is from Newsweek, and again, that ties in all the other connections going on in the border, drug wars. We've got the reports coming up of National Guard heading to the border, the Arizona controversial immigration law, which is essentially what the federal law is about to kick in, and all these things are building up. But let's hop to my own backyard from NewsJunkiePost.com, Oregon, to vote on marijuana dispensaries. Oregon voters are going to decide this fall whether to approve a network of medical marijuana dispensaries for approved patients. Secretary of State Elections Division last Friday announced that the dispensary initiative had enough valid petition signatures to qualify for this November ballot. And of course, California is about to vote on legalizing it. These are the interesting themes and memes that we see swirling around us. And again, doing this show more and more, and longtime listeners know that we've kind of hit and mentioned and put these things out there. Because again, open source intelligence, we can do the math and make an educated guess about what the elite moves are going to be. Ecstasy as viable treatment for trauma victims? More on that from naturalnews.com. And then lastly, on the drug war notes from Daniel Hopsicker on madcalprod.com. He follows the American drug lords and their connections to the intelligence networks and their connections to catalyzing catastrophic events like the events of 9/11. Pilot of DC-9 in 5.5-ton cocaine bust escaped custody in 3 countries. The identity of the pilot of the American-registered DC-9 from St. Petersburg, Florida, caught carrying 5.5 tons of coke in Mexico's Yucatan several years ago, long a mystery, finally saw the light of day recently in Mexico. Carmelo Vasquez Guerra, a Venezuelan, was the DC-9's pilot who was said to have escaped from the airport while his airplane was being seized and 4 other members of his crew were arrested. He was later taken into custody by Mexican authorities and charged with flying an airplane packed with 128 identical suitcases filled with cocaine. Getting caught with that much, you'd think you'd be sent to prison for, like, ever, right? No. Out after 2 years. This, of course, connects to what we reported on a couple of weeks ago. That would be Wachovia's drug habit and, of course, the old boys and Wall Street and drugs. Gets to the heart of what a lot of this is all about. These are, the memes that we see. That when you start to look back, you'll see a lot of the same organizations throughout the generations performing the same operations. Let's get to our Econo Crash updates. Econo Crash, I think, essentially being another word, phrase I've tried to coin to use on the show to incorporate, and I think you'll find that if you start to Google these words, that again, it's a way to get our themes and memes out there. Competing currencies and scary graphs. Our first bit here is the second story on the latest NewWorldNextWeek.com episode, and the source is back to ConnectMidMichigan.com, and there's a 2-part report, and we're going to get into it. One of those videos is on YouTube.com/MediaMonarchy. Competing currency being accepted in Michigan. New types of money popping up across mid-Michigan. And supporters say it's not counterfeit. Of course not. It's a competing currency. And it can be anything we want it to be. Ultimately, this is looking behind the curtain. When you find out the fiat currencies and the way the banksters run. And the illusion of money. That again, they've taken the resources and given us slips of paper that represent that resource that we no longer have access to. And this, of course, isn't just happening in Michigan. It's happening all over the place. Just like the CascadiaHourExchange.com from right here in the Pacific Northwest. But the local NBC station did a 2-part story. And again, both those videos are up. Let's get a quick clip of competing currencies in Michigan.
They sound like real money and look like real money, but you can't take them to the bank. That's because they're not made at a government mint, but rather private mints.
They sell at least 3 or 4 every single day, and then I get one or two back a week.
Dave Gilley, owner of Gilley's Coney Island Restaurant in Genesee County's Genesee Township, also accepts silver, gold, copper, and other precious metals to pay for food. He says if he wanted to, he could accept marbles.
Do people have to accept dollars or money? No, they don't. They can accept anything they want, or they can refuse to accept anything.
He's absolutely right. The U.S. Treasury Department says the Coinage Act of 1965 says private businesses are free to develop their own policies on whether or not to accept cash unless there is a state law which says otherwise. That allows gas stations to say they don't accept $50 or $100 bills after a certain time of day in hopes of not getting robbed. A chiropractic office in Lapeer County's Deerfield Township allows creativity when it comes to payment.
This establishment accepts any form of silver, gold, chicken, apple pie. You know, if someone works it out with me, I've taken many things.
Jeff Kachunian says he used this Ron Paul half troy ounce of silver to get $25 worth of gas from a local station. While the government and banks don't accept them, many others do. There was a time in America when you could buy 4 gallons of gas for a dollar. That dollar came in the form of a coin, around 1 ounce, made mostly of silver. In today's market, that same coin is worth about 10 times its face value because of the silver. Therefore, that same coin, in theory, could still buy around 4 gallons of gas.
Silver is always, pretty much always worth the same thing. I mean, even if you go back thousands of years, the amount of product that you could buy with an ounce of silver or an ounce of gold has always been pretty standard.
That can't be said of the U.S. dollar bill or U.S. coins made after 1964 that are no longer made with silver. Take a look at this chart from the U.S. Department of Labor. It says since 1913 until 2001, the U.S. dollar has lost 96% of its purchasing power. However, supporters of alternative currency say silver remains strong.
The metal, because it's a commodity, it's a precious metal, it's retained and or increased in value to today's dollar, which is deflated.
It protects you from the inflation that the paper money gives you.
The government says the bills themselves are worthless. The U.S. Treasury website says the notes have no value for themselves, but for what they will buy. Supporters of competing currency say they'd like to see the government go back to a gold and silver-backed currency rather than simply printing more money.
If we did that, we could maintain the value of the dollar. And we could protect. We wouldn't be in this economic collapse that we were in.
And supporters say there are 150 alternative currencies in the U.S. Federal agents raided one of the most popular alternative currency companies in 2007, Liberty Dollar. A lawsuit is still pending about the company's future and possibility of making more currency.
Now, of course, they don't mention that that would be the Ron Paul Liberty Dollar. Do they? So competing currencies, which again are popping up all over the place. And I think the thing that came to me as we were listening to that clip is that ultimately when everybody realizes that we can make our own food, money, and media, well, there you go. On down the Econo Crash updates, half of us being the big U.S., have less than $2,000 banked for retirement. Of Goats and Men has a nice little screen grab of the S&P stock market chart where you can watch it in real time dive as Ben Bernanke, head of the fraudulent, neither federal, no reserve. When Bernanke talks, people listen. Where he was talking about, of course, depressions and bad outcomes and all their semantic games about, again, fiat money. Funny money. Ponzi schemes. Pyramid schemes. We noted on the B-side episode in the food bubble that, of course, as Goldman had to pay back the largest bank fine in history, they made it back in after-hours trading in a day. More on that from allgov.com, and again, their connection to the food bubble. Obama signs sweeping financial overhaul into law. This would be the Dodd-Frank monstrosity that will do nothing. And again, the analogies we use, because they're so pertinent, they're like junkies that need a fix bigger and bigger and bigger each time of this fake money. Need more zeros and ones. And the banks play Don't Throw Me Into the Briar Patch. Now, this is from the Associated Press, and you got to get a load of this, just in the language of the article. Reveling over a new milestone in his presidency, a triumphant Barack Obama on Wednesday signed into law the most sweeping overhaul of lending and high finance rules since the Great Depression, adding safeguards for millions of consumers and aiming to restrain Wall Street excesses that could set off a new recession. These new rules, however, are only at a midpoint. Banking and market regulators will have up to 2 years to write many of the new regulations required by law, extending uncertainty and ushering in a new phase of lobbying by financial firms. Regulators will have to be vigilant, Obama Saya says. More on that from Tarpley.net. The president sought to quell public anger over the $700 billion bank rescue the government created at the height of the crisis to reassure the markets. Now, of course, as we get lost in the phony left-right paradigm and the bread and circus and the talking heads and the corporate-controlled structures, and we watch these shadows on the wall and the shell games be played, if you'll recall, it was Bush, the previous puppet, that forced through this TARP. Obama was just there as the already coronated one to make sure he got all his Congress cronies in line, and they, of course, fell in line because they knew, hey, he's going to be the new boss. It was a seamless handoff. The law gives regulators new authority to liquidate large interconnected financial firms that are failing. Because of this law, the American people will never be asked again to foot the bill for Wall Street's mistakes. There will be no more tax-funded bailouts, period. Obama said, quote, there will be no more tax-funded bailouts, period, end quote. Read my lips. No new taxes. I did not have sex with that woman. I'm not a crook. I was just following orders. And all your favorite hits throughout history, as our front men, puppet men, move the agenda along for the unseen hands and the invisible, sinister forces behind the scenes. We don't believe that the Illuminati pulls every string and makes every single thing happen, but when you dig and pull on the thread and pull back the curtain, you will find these connections. So we'll see if that audacious quote surrounding this ridiculous legislation will add that to the greatest hits list of Obamasiah. The scariest unemployment graph I've seen yet is from theatlantic.com, and it starts at 1965 and goes up past 2010, and it's an amazing, huge arc. I can't tell you the percentage, but you can see the graph. It's all embedded, all shared for you. We laughed a few moments ago about the 700 bailout. But let's hop to Reuters from July 21st. U.S. financial bailout figure hits $3.7 trillion. Increased housing commitments swelled U.S. taxpayer infusions into the nation's financial system by $700 billion in the past year to around $3.7 trillion. The Special Inspector General for the TARP, Troubled Asset Relief Program, said the increase was largely due to the government's pledges to supply capital to Fannie and Freddie and guarantee more mortgages to support the housing market. $700 billion is now there, admitting $3.7 trillion. And I believe we know that it's much larger than that, unfortunately. The last couple EconoCrash notes here for you. On shtfplan.com. I always struggle with that URL. Shit hit the fan plan. .com. Prominent hedge fund managers, Idaho Ranch, it would be a place you could hole up in. And we tie in all the other elite rats sensing what's going on as the deck chairs are being moved on the Hindenburg or the Titanic. And the band plays on, and we watch LeBron and Lindsay Lohan and all the other celebrity America's Got blank fluff. They're bailing out. Our last note, we'll end on a somewhat humorous note to all of this. And again, it can't all be constant gloom and doom. We kind of have to laugh and see the amazement in some things. I subscribe to a few of the, you know, news of the weird, strange news RSS feeds. ClickToHouston.com always gives me some good ones. Darth Vader robs New York Bank. He was in a poorly put together Darth Vader outfit with camouflage pants and silly things like that. But again, it's interesting to see the memes. And as long as we can see, it's been the banksters versus the people. And that's what seems to go on and on and on. Let's move to the latest, I don't know what you want to call it, gloom and doom, the latest hosannas, all that surrounds our current puppet-in-chief. And again, we're nonpartisan here. We figured out, finally, that both parties are completely corrupt and controlled, and they keep us in this two-party paradigm where the names and faces sometimes change, but more often than not, they don't. A lot of you out there think about how long we've had Bushes and Clintons in seats of power, and then those same names behind the seats of power. And we'll get to Brzezinski and the like here in just a few moments. But our latest Obamasiah update starts with another one from allgov.com. And again, this breaks down the phony left-right paradigm that is so imperative, especially as we're now hurtling towards 2012 and all that that entails, but specifically here talking about our selections. Obama administration worse on whistleblowers than previous puppet administration. That's my headline. The Obama administration is being accused of getting away with crackdowns on government whistleblowers that President Bush would have been publicly admonished for. ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, has allegedly gone after an ICE agent who told the media in March about new quotas for immigration arrests. We have the flashback link for you there. That, of course, ties in with other police departments finally admitting what's long been that urban legend of police quotas. It is real. In another example, the DOD is restricting media access to military officers following McChrystal's comments to Rolling Stone, and the Pentagon has gone after an Army intel officer who leaked a controversial video of collateral murder. We've covered all these stories for you on Media Monarchy and Cyberspace War. Some of these prosecutions wouldn't have happened when Bush was president because there would have been a more partisan backlash. Stephen Cohn, executive director of the National Whistleblowers Center, whistleblowers.org, telling the Washington Post, "The problem when you have a Democratic president, it's not like Obama is signing the indictments, but it mutes the criticism." And that's what we've discussed here time and time again, is that when we have a fake progressive Democrat figurehead, it's most effective to attack them from that weak flank. Attack them from the left. That's why it does no good to have all the right-wing reactionaries who didn't say a damn thing while all these things were already going on under Bush. They can now only somehow magically see it now that it's the guy with the D after his name that they don't like. They know that's that other team we don't like, because we love sports in the Coliseum here. That's why this is all key to break down the fake left-right paradigm. Now, someone who's quite skilled at attacking the Obamasiah from the left is Webster Tarpley, tarpley.net. We are going to hear from him later on the coming climate control, but that's a little bit later. He's got a massive new article simply titled, "Obama is Preparing to Bomb Iran." It is page after page after page. It is heavily sourced and footnoted, and it's the type of article that will ultimately probably get put together in whatever will be the latest book from Tarpley.net. He's, of course, the one who published George Bush, the unauthorized biography, Poppy Bush. So again, see, folks, depending on which team are more likely to listen to this information when it's about a guy they didn't like and suspected the worst of. But when it's about a guy they like and want to hope for the best of, they don't want to hear it. But here it all is. One of the main string pullers behind the mysterious Barry Satoro, the Obamasiah, is a guy named Zbigniew Brzezinski. You should, of course, know him. He was Jimmy Carter's national security director. And he writes books with names like The Grand Chessboard and talks about Western geoprimacy and lays it all out. And he's connected to Operation Cyclone, which was, of course, funding the Mujahideen to draw in the Soviets, to give the Soviets their Vietnam. We then created the Mujahideen, which turned into Al-Qaeda, which translates to the base, which means the database of Mujahideen fighters that are on the Central Intelligence Agency and other black op, shadowy front shell cutout forms. That's how it works. You watch movies about it all the time, but somehow you don't think it really happens in real life, that art doesn't imitate life, imitates politics, imitates life. We've got another clip, you know, I guess added to his greatest hits list that we'll have to compile one of these days. Brzezinski, talking on one of the Talking Head shows. Again, the link is here, thanks to blacklistednews.com. Not sure which Talking Head show it is on the corporate-controlled media. But this is important, and again, this is why we watch the memes. This is why we watch the words and the signs and listen to the things that they say. Don't take that for gospel. We watch what they do. But again, when folks like Brzezinski talk, we need to listen and decipher. We're going to break this down after the clip, but Brzezinski senses a malaise with Obama.
And there was one other. All of them were bad news for the Democratic Party. I mean, if you talk about any of them, none of them was really positive. Politically, I mean, you were in a Democratic administration, had some troubles. What would you say their message ought to be?
No, I think it goes even further than that. And I can't really articulate this well, but I have a sense that over the last several decades, there were always mobilizing issues that were uppermost in the public mind. They were either domestic, such as, for example, as there was occasional recessions and the most severe financial crisis, or international, the threat of war, some collision, or military engagement, or even 9/11. Mm-hmm. I think we're now going through a phase in which there is a sense of pervasive malaise, which affects different groups of society in different ways. So people are dissatisfied, they're slightly worried, they don't see a good, certain future for themselves or for the country, but in their own narrow sphere. There is no grand mobilizing idea, and I have a sense that Obama, who started so well and who really captivated people, he captivated me, has not been able yet to generate some sort of organizing idea for an age which combines a malaise that's pervasive and percolating and complexity, which is hard to understand.
And it's being buffeted by, I think, this, the mobilizing force of the war over the role of government.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah, but it's one of several issues. Yeah. What about foreign policy? Who are we really fighting against? Why are we making all these sacrifices? Why are we spending all this money? Why are other well-doing societies not sticking their noses into these wars? Uh-huh. Maybe they know something.
Yeah.
So all of that, I think, contributes to a feeling of uneasiness. And then you get people like Gingrich or Palin or Romney coming along. Each one mobilizes a slice of all of these concerns. So Palin, if I may say so, in a rather nutty fashion. Romney kind of repeating slogans from recent past. Gingrich trying to sort of revive himself with his past slogans. None of them have a comprehensive idea. But they have enough, each of them, to stitch together a different part of 46%.
We need a new paradigm.
Yes, we
do. And the president hasn't articulated it.
Order out of chaos. We need a new paradigm. You just heard Pat Buchanan say it right there. And you heard one of the talking heads, when Brzezinski said malaise, you heard her murmur in recognition. Because again, as we note, sometimes it's hard to remember what happened last week, let alone last decade or beyond. Malaise is a well-known term in geopolitical or perhaps just domestic political circles. So let's hop over to Wikipedia for the presidency of Jimmy Carter and hit the subheading on the malaise speech. Malaise, of course, being the French word for sickness, illness. M-A-L-A-I-S-E. When the energy market exploded, an occurrence Carter tried to avoid during his term, he was planning on delivering his fifth major speech on energy. However, he felt the American people were no longer listening. Carter left for the presidential retreat of Camp David. For more than a week, a veil of secrecy enveloped the proceedings. Dozens of prominent Democratic Party leaders, members of Congress, governors, labor leaders, academics, and clergy were summoned to the mountaintop retreat to confer with the beleaguered president. His pollster, Pat Kennedy, or rather Pat Caddell, told him that the American people simply faced a crisis of confidence because of the assassinations of JFK, RFK, MLK, Vietnam, Watergate. So, on July 15, 1979, Jimmy Carter gave a nationally televised speech in which he identified what he believed to be a, quote, crisis of confidence among the American people. This came to be known as his malaise speech, although the word never appeared in it. The speech was actually written by Hendrik Hertzberg and Gordon Stewart. Don't have time to get into their connections and backgrounds here, but you should. So those are the words and the memes that we track. So when we see and track the signs and symbols and sigils and themes and memes, we've got to put it on the record. What did we say? Trying to record it as quickly as possible and do the analysis later. The last couple Obamasiah updates, Obama played phony populist card and said that the GOP was the party of the rich. Ha ha ha. More on that from ActivistPost.com again. They like to play the class war card, the race war card, all their favorite cards being thrown down on the deck. Down on the table. Students and stars celebrate Broadway and the arts at the White House. More on that from the Washington Post, but I've essentially saw someone break it down quite well, saying that basically Obama knows they can't go running around to Broadway while things are falling apart, fiddling while Rome burns, or playing the guitar while New Orleans drowned, or reading about your pet goat as thousands died. They'll bring the celebrities to them. Sure, they deserve a break, but it's always just kind of disgusting when you see our misleaders running around, what, Condi Rice buying shoes, all those things. Our last note on the Obamasiah ties into a big, huge poop storm that we're not even going to touch. Again, it's the bread and circus of things. But we do have the link up to the video that will more or less explain it all in one simple, pretty much bite-sized form, and that would be the exclusive latest special comment from everybody's favorite Microsoft National Broadcasting Corporation, General Electric, fake left, former sports caster Keith Olbermann, that again, he used to do great work against the Bush administration. Has he said things critical of the Obamasiah? Of course he has, but again, we see the fake paradigms shift. Sometimes it's Fox, sometimes it's MSNBC. Special comment, race war and pornographers of propaganda. This dives into the whole story of Andrew Breitbart and accusations of racism and the USDA and firing someone and again playing the race cards. This was about video that was selectively edited and then it wasn't so bad, but they had already fired someone. This woman's name, Shirley Sherrod, S-H-E-R-R-O-D, I think is kind of a fitting name for what all of this is, ultimately, a charade. Now, we could have gotten into that on the New World next week, but that's bread and circus. That's shadows on the wall. That's the fake WWF fight that we're all supposed to rabble and tear each other apart over. I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. One of the other stories we could have gotten into was perhaps one of the biggest stories of the past week, if not for quite some time. If only because of its surrounding hype, of course, making it a bigger story. Nothing attracts a crowd like a crowd, as the song said. A hidden world growing beyond control. That's my headline for Top Secret America. This is the new project from the Washington Post, which we, of course, have noted time and time again that the heads have been connected to Bilderberg meetings, have been connected and identified with the mighty Wurlitzer, outing intelligence plants and connections and cutouts and sources in the mainstream media, in our most revered media, the Church Committee. Look at even interviews with Leonard Bernstein. You could look at interviews with composer, conductor Leonard Bernstein. But what I meant was Carl in Playboy back in the 70s, talking about CIA plants within corporate-controlled media. So, topsecretamerica.com is the name of this massive new project from the Washington Post that is pretty interesting. It's well put together. Folks have noted, even aside from all of the politics, that it's just a nice layout, and it has an interactive feel with the way the charts and the graphs and the videos and the information is all put together to tell this story. But let's just break it down with the quick brief. Top Secret America is a project nearly 2 years in the making that describes the huge national security buildup in the U.S. after 9/11. When it comes to national security, all too often no expense is spared and few questions are asked, with the result an enterprise so massive that nobody in government has a full understanding of it. It is, as Dana Priest and William Arkin have found, ubiquitous, often inefficient, and mostly invisible to the people it is meant to protect and who fund it. The articles in this Top Secret America series and an online database, again all at topsecretamerica.com, depict the scope and complexity of the government's national security program through interactive maps and other graphics. Every data point on the website is substantiated by at least two public records. Because of the nature of this project, we allowed government officials to see the website several months ago and asked them to tell us of any specific concerns. They offered none at that time. As the project evolved, we shared the website's revised capabilities. Again, we asked for specific concerns. One government body objected to certain data points on the site and explained why. We removed those items. Another agency objected that the entire website could pose a national security risk, but declined to offer specific comments. As I said, this was a massive story, and we've got all the other sources and documentation, contextual, supplemental information to flesh out the story. Links to Danger Room, Cryptogon, and we even have our related updates posted below this just brief article. And again, I've not gone through all the resources that are there. But Jeremy Scahill breaks it down quite well. He would know. He's the man who wrote the book on Blackwater and our private military industrial complex. And that's what this is about. Essentially, the blank check of 9/11. The official conspiracy theory of 9/11 is what now has led these folks, who of course have connections to administrations and the private sector, making the bombs and the guns and the prisons and the weapons and the active denial systems, naked body scanners, wonderful missiles, all those things. That's how this all works. That's why 9/11 truth is so essential, regardless of which party you may affiliate yourself with. Jeremy Scahill breaks it down quite well. Corporate media discover private spies. In other news, no WMD in Iraq. Now, this is on The Nation, and again, another news outlet that does do good work, yet we can't help but notice that it is a foundation-funded outlet from the same multi-generational serial killers and organizations. Their head editor is a CFR crony. Now, what Scales basically saying is you guys are the same folks who beat the drums for weapons of mass destruction and all these other ridiculous things, but now we're all supposed to believe you and thank you for telling us what we already knew, but fortunately putting it into a little more bit of a user-friendly user interface. So on down the list, 9/11 attacks spawned big U.S. government. That's from spacewar.com. And several from Danger Room, Intel Crats, awesomely bad pushback to top secret America. U.S. Intel community inefficient, unmanageable. That's on CNN. Nation spies contractors braced for the Washington Post expose. That is from Danger Room. That came right before the release. How Congress fueled the rise of private spies. Intel chief says don't get shrill about these spooks for hire. And I think you can kind of see what's going on here. There's a long set of videos with Max Kaiser of MaxKaiser.com. Of course, was a recent guest on CorbettReport.com talking about targeted boycotts of multinational corporations. There's videos where he's breaking down this NSA, CIA, secret America connections. And again, as we've noted on cyberspacewar.com, this swirls around Google and their why spying and their Chinese censorship and their furthering connections to the intelligence agencies in the wake of this cyber attack that we had last December. So, again, my friends, to be the broken record, it's all quite connected. So, one of the videos that they do have up on Top Secret America is kind of a trailer for this series from the Washington Post. We're going to hear a little bit of that. Then we're going to hear Barbara Starr on CNN talking about Top Secret America.
You think you know America, but you don't know Top Secret America. We're all aware that there are three branches of government in the United States, but in response to 9/11, a fourth branch has emerged. It is protected from public scrutiny by extraordinary secrecy. Top Secret America.
This is a closed community, and since 9/11, it's become even more so.
The money spigot was just opened after 9/11, and nobody dared say, I don't think we should be spending that much.
It has become so big, and the lines of responsibility are so blurred, that even our nation's leaders don't have a handle on it. Where is it? It's being built from coast to coast, hidden within some of America's most familiar cities and neighborhoods. In Colorado, in Nebraska, in Texas, in Florida, in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. Top Secret America includes hundreds of federal departments and agencies operating out of 1,300 facilities around this country. They contract the services of nearly 2,000 companies. In all, more people than live in our nation's capital have top secret security clearance.
It's, again, the size, the lack of transparency, and the cost. And if we don't get it right, the consequences are gigantic.
Barbara Starr joins us live from the Pentagon now. And Barbara, the bulk of these intelligence agencies are within the Department of Defense. Has it grown too big to succeed?
Well, you know, John, I just spoke to a senior Defense Department official a few moments ago who said that, look, you know, yes, we acknowledge the intelligence community grew very rapidly after the 9/11 attacks. There are some redundancies. There are some inefficiencies. We're looking at it. He said, but remember, the U.S. government has thwarted several attempts since 9/11, several potential terrorist attacks, of course, as recently as that attempted Christmas Day bombing of the Detroit airliner, the actual attack. Was thwarted by some people on the airliner. Didn't all work exactly as it should, but they say they are making every effort. The Washington Post was a two-year investigation in the making. It is quite a piece of journalism. It's phenomenal what they did come up with. They report, for example, there are 1,200 government organizations involved in intelligence gathering, nearly 2,000 private companies, 2,000 contractors involved, 850,000 people with top secret clearances. The article, however, had it gotten a lot of people jittery in Washington in the last couple of days, in fact, because there was concern the Washington Post was going to reveal some very specific information. The director director of National Intelligence, had put out a statement saying, quote, foreign intelligence services and terrorist organizations and criminal elements will have potential interest in this kind of information. They had been very concerned. The Post was going to publish on their website specific addresses of the hundreds, if not thousands, of locations around the country that house top secret contractor and intelligence community facilities. That website is now up and running. You can log on and see it, but the specific addresses are not there. So there, some of the concern about security and targeting of these facilities has been averted. The bottom line, the government says, you know, that they have worked very hard to avert potential terrorist attacks. They know the intelligence community is growing. They're looking at it. John?
And the Washington Post actually acceded to wishes by the intelligence community to take some of the information off of that website, didn't it?
Absolutely, John. What we now know is that the Washington Post had planned to publish those very specific addresses, which the U.S. government thought would be an intelligence risk, could have posed problems because it would have given actual street addresses for potential terrorist attacks. We know there have been, or at least two letters, two levels of very high communication between the U.S. government and the Post. U.S. government officials tell us they believe they succeeded in convincing the Post not to publish that specific information. John?
Some of the larger facilities like the National Intelligence Center, the CIA, they're pretty difficult to miss.
They certainly are, but maybe not so much places like Mount Weather in West Virginia. My friends, we're now into hour number two of episode 179 for Media Monarchy. It's July 23rd, 2010. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. We are live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. for 2 hours on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, zeropointradio.com, and revereradio.net. Again, I'll remind you and plead with you, zeropointradio.com needs your support to survive, quite simply. If you find value in alternative media sources, please throw a little bit of your zeros and ones their way while we still have these structures to be able to do these things. Of course, Media Monarchy is your username or keyword on all the bells and whistles and popular digital town squares like Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Ustream, Blip, Cafe Press, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. And again, we'll remind you, Radio23.org supplies the high-quality downloads of Media Monarchy episodes suitable for rebroadcast on your pirate, internet, community, media, outlet, whatever it is. You don't have to ask. It's public domain. It's open source intelligence. Information wants to be free. And of course, we do still have quite a bit to go over on this episode 179. And the way we're going to get into this hour number two, we're going to start with all the latest BioWars and ViroHealth updates posted up as toxicity and impurities. And again, I'm now losing track of just how long it's been. I suppose we're now over 3 months since the start of this Gulf oil spill, this catastrophic catalyzing event. And we've covered most of the ins and outs. We haven't gone into great depth on any of these stories over the last 3 months, but again, I've all put it down, laid it out. The flashbacks are all there. We'll start off with DigitalJournal.com. Watchdog says EPA covering up toxicity of Gulf oil dispersants. Hugh Kaufman, senior policy analyst at the Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response at the EPA, says the EPA is covering up the toxic effects of the dispersant used to help combat the oil spill. Kaufman has never shirked from going public when he's found the EPA to be in the wrong, something that has made his career with the EPA rocky at times. Kaufman has been ringing the alarm bell over the Deepwater Horizon oil spill since it began. On Tuesday, he told Democracy Now, and this would be a different Kaufman talking to Democracy Now, not the Frederick Kaufman that talked to Democracy Now about the food bubble that we cover on foodworldorder.com. This would be Hugh Kaufman talking about the EPA covering up Corexit. In the exclusive interview, Kaufman noted that the EPA is covering up the toxic effects of the dispersant used to help combat the oil spill, as well as misleading the public and the government. British Petroleum had tried to hide the true magnitude of the spill by using dispersants, while noting that BP couldn't hide the spill any longer due to having to make its live underwater camera available to the public. Kaufman said the use of dispersants has not slowed. And unfortunately, dolphins hemorrhaging is just the top of the list here. But Kaufman says, ultimately, follow the money. Larry Fink, BlackRock, British Petroleum, Goldman Sachs, Corexit, EPA. Remember, the EPA told folks that the air was safe to breathe at Ground Zero. On down the list of Gulf oil updates from WDSU.com, people are getting sick, worker says. And again, just like 9/11, just like Katrina, just like our, again, catalyzing catastrophic events of the last decade that are ultimately used, because again, our misleaders say never let a crisis go wasted, being used to further along the agenda of their funders and handlers. And they're the front people. We've heard from Matt Simmons before. Of course, he is a CFR-connected oily insider. He was the one talking about preparations being made for mass evacuations, which has gone viral in the alternative media. But again, we always have to watch what we put out there and what we maybe trumpet. That again, we've said martial law probably isn't coming tomorrow. It's incrementalism. But CFR's Matt Simmons says, we have now killed the Gulf. I guess we can tag that along with some other greatest hits like Richard Clark saying your government failed you. But how about this? BP posts photoshopped photo of their crisis command center. That's from AmericaBlog.com, and we saw more than one instance of that, I believe. And just more connections between seeing the way things have rolled out between things like Katrina and 9/11. You had the forewarnings, you had the whistleblowers, you had people saying the standard operating procedures weren't being followed, the routine protections were, for some reason, stripped away at the crucial moments. There were drills and exercises going on surrounding the events. There were massive stock market put options, short sells on all the companies involved in all these kind of events. And then you see the sometimes, I guess, fortunately, ham-fisted cover-up, which cover-up proves the crime. More no-show witnesses in oil rig explosion probe. So again, let's glance back to Google News, where we noted just over an hour ago, the story has now made it, fortunately filtered its way, bubbled its way, if you will, like a tarball to the top of Google News from the New York Times. Oil rig alarm was not fully turned on. Alarms detectors disabled so top rig officials could sleep, reports the Los Angeles Times. Do you see the connections? So now, AllGov is reporting on these no-show witnesses in the Gulf probe. I'm sure, unfortunately, as we'll get into it, we'll see folks be suicided, disappeared, convenient plane crashes and the like. But let's hop across the pond, my friends, to see BP awarded massive Iraq oil contracts, thanks to Gordon New World Order Brown, who, of course, he's now the old boss. The UK's met the new boss. More on that from activistpost.com. And we start to go around the world. Another major oil spill after pipeline explosions in China. Again, from digitaljournal.com. But that's not all going on in China. 700 plus dead in floods. 5.8 earthquake shakes Iran. 3.6 earthquake shook the District of Criminals area, including all the surrounding states. Pennsylvania, Maryland, Virginia, West Virginia. And it gets even uglier. This story sources to the New York Times, but Cryptogon.com gives you all the supplemental, subtextual, contextual information to show that, again, all these stories aren't exclusive to these things that we're talking about. We can put it all together, and again, that's what a free and open web has let us do. We can put these things together and see the malfeasance. We can see the repeated practices from our misleaders, who again cause the problem to give us the solution, posing as our saviors. Columbia University Brain Imaging Center routinely injected mental patients with drugs that contained potentially dangerous impurities. So just as we saw tainted swine flu being connected to Baxter and all the other pharmaceutical connections, such as this next one from naturalnews.com. 90% of the scientists backing Avandia, that would be this latest controversial happy pill that will fix everything from the pharmaceutical industrial complex. 90% of the scientists who back Avandia have financial ties to drug companies. Surprise, surprise. From bioprepwatch.com, the Department of Homeland Stupidity has announced $1.8 billion in grants that will go to fight, oh goodness, they call it CBRN. That's chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and even, I believe, some explosives. And they're setting these things up all around the country. We've seen other response centers being set up. I believe we'll see more of that just a little bit later in this episode. But our last note on BioWars and EnviroHealth, toxicity and impurities, pain pill abuse up 400%. In the last decade. So as we noted, we've lost 46,000 dairy farms in the last decade. We've had a 400% increase in people using psychotropic drugs provided by the pharmaceutical industrial complexes who connect back to, hell, Nazi Germany. Bayer, Zyklon B, IG Farben. It's all connected. We're going to now get into, and I thought maybe I had a clip about that, pain pill abuse, but I guess I don't. Again, it's a well-produced operation, but, you know, sometimes things fall through the cracks. It is a one-man band. And again, I'll always throw out that your help, your links, your news tips, that all of those things are majorly appreciated. Again, that's what makes all this amazing, is to chat and meet and connect with folks who are essentially all around the world. And again, as everybody's kind of rubbing their eyes and seeing what's going on, and again, I try not to use these really simplistic, oh, you know, you need to wake up. You're a sheeple. Because it's not that simple, and waking up isn't a snap, and oh, I'm totally awake, and I understand everything, and I know exactly what to do. That's not the case. It's kind of a long, difficult process. So as we shift now into the police state updates, we're going to have articles from all around the world, but we're going to kick it off with another one from one of the Watson boys. And again, we don't follow any leader, but folks like Kurt Nemo and Webster Tarpley and Paul Joseph Watson being some of the big wigs in this alternative media, some folks derisively call it conspiracy culture. We go where the good information leads us. Rockefeller study envisages a future dictatorship controlled by elite. My headline is a lot more simple. Rockefeller study predictably sees future oligarchy. Global pandemics that kill millions, mandatory quarantines, checkpoints, biometric ID cards, and a world of top-down government control. These are not things lifted from the latest sci-fi blockbuster movie. They're part of the Rockefeller Foundation's vision for what the globe might be like in 15 to 20 years' time under a new world order tightly controlled by the elite. This is one of four scenarios for the future outlined in the Rockefeller Foundation's Scenarios for the Future of Technology and International Development, a study produced in association with the Global Business Network, GBN.com, and we do have the PDF. You can download this whole report. But continuing, entitled Lockstep, that scenario depicts a world of tighter top-down government control and more authoritarian leadership with limited innovation and growing citizen pushback. After global H1N1 pandemic originating from geese infects 20% of the global population and kills 8 million people, the economy grinds to a halt and governments impose authoritarian measures to respond to the crisis. During the pandemic, national leaders around the world flexed their authority and imposed airtight rules and restrictions, from the mandatory wearing of face masks to body temperature checks at the entries of communal spaces like train stations and supermarkets. Tellingly, even after this fictional lockstep pandemic fades, these draconian measures remain in place and even intensify as leaders take a firmer grip on power and citizens willingly sacrifice their sovereignty and privacy, leading to a, quote, more controlled world bossed by, quote, paternalistic states who impose biometric ID cards for all citizens. Enforced cooperation with global regulatory agreements forges the path towards global governance, even as a backlash ensues following public displays of virulent nationalism. Ecofascism is also brought to the fore in the lockstep scenario, which discusses how high-emission cars will be banned and every home will be forced to install solar panels by law. This implementation of top-down authoritarianism causes entrepreneurial activity to wither and the economy shudders. But by 2025, people start to grow weary of so much top-down control and letting leaders and authorities make choices for them, and an organized pushback against this tyranny begins to gather momentum. Even those who liked the greater stability and predictability of this world begin to grow uncomfortable and constrained by so many tight rules and by the strictness of national borders and boundaries. The feeling lingered that sooner or later something would inevitably upset the neat order that the world governments had worked so hard to establish. The important thing to understand from that scenario outlined by the Rockefeller study is that China is praised as the model for how governments globally should respond to crises. The most draconian and dictatorial policies, including mandatory quarantines, are praised in the scenario as having saved millions of lives, stopping the spread of the virus far earlier than in other countries and enabling a swifter post-pandemic recovery, while allowing people freedom of mobility is scorned as having worsened the crisis. So, ironic, therefore, it is that just this past week, the AP reported on how the Chinese government has already virtually imposed checkpoint quarantines on its poorer citizens by gating and locking some of its lower-income neighborhoods overnight, with police or security checking identification papers around the clock in a throwback to an older style of control. That's Associated Press quote. The Rockefeller study is not a warning against preventing the kind of tyranny contained in this scenario from unfolding. It's a blueprint for how globalists want to exploit global crises like bioterror attacks and pandemics in order to completely destroy society and rebuild it under a new world order in their image. This Rockefeller scenario, we'll note in closing, bears more than a passing resemblance to the 2007 UK Ministry of Defense study, which forecast that by 2035, people would have brain chips implanted, that the middle class would become revolutionary, and that society would be gripped by chaos and civil unrest as a result of increased globalization, immigration, and a more authoritarian state. It's crystal clear from the reading of Lockstep that the oppressive society portrayed in the study is not presented as an admonishment of how governments would cynically seize upon a pandemic to set up a police state and empower themselves as dictators. It's a ringing endorsement that this approach would be the correct thing to do. This is the post-industrial society demanded by Bilderberg luminaries like European Commission Chief Barroso. This is what globalists want. Pandemics, warfare, chaos, crises that they can engineer and then exploit to lock in place a dictatorial society ruled by the elite from their ivory towers, while the citizens are reduced to impoverished, squabbling, dependent peasants, tightly controlled with sophisticated Big Brother technology, far too concerned about where their next meal's coming from to have time to overthrow their new rulers. I didn't intend to read that full article, but I think once we got going, we saw how it connects and how it lays out, and how we've seen this in our video games and in our sci-fi, as Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org noted, sci-fi giving us this predictive programming, this new religion. So, again, you can download that full PDF, Scenarios for the Future of Technology and International Development. I did, I guess, kind of accidentally put that PDF link in this post. So, again, if you subscribe to feeds.feedburner.com/mediamonarchy, which you should put it in your Google Reader. You should also put it into your iTunes. That way you won't miss an article or a video or a show or a mixtape or an interview or a B-side, and sometimes accidentally throw a PDF in there. So that got served out to you in your podcatcher of choice. Moving down the police state updates. And again, things build up as we're getting towards the end of July already, as things really speed up. Obama sending 1,200 National Guardsmen to seal the Mexican border. That's from The Guardian. And we also get from the Associated Press, Schwarzenegger, son of a Nazi, mobilizing the National Guard to the border as well. This tying in with our Oakland pot factory story, this tying in with Oakland protests, as well as the cops not responding to anything. This ties in with Arizona and their new immigration law. And again, the social football that we're thrown, that will tear each other apart along our devised tribe lines that we're put in and kept in. And again, as we've said, immigration issue is a means by the elites to further their agendas. It's being used for a purpose. Oh, and we just mentioned, here they are again. And we're going to grab this again from BioPrepWatch.com. 8 regional homeland seaburn response force units announced. And quickly on down the list, filming police is often calls for arrest. That's from ABC News, and that's an update on the story we hit a couple of weeks ago, where essentially the guy kind of looked like he provoked a situation so he could videotape it and say, look at what the cops are doing. Not the way to do it. However, shining light on the idea that pretty much filming any cop now gets you arrested in the United North American community. American-bred terrorist causing alarm for law enforcement. That's more homegrown errorism threataganda. That's coming from ABC News and NationalTerrorAlert.com. Again, Al-Qaeda is everywhere, hiding under the bed. Or maybe the snitch army needs to come and make sure you're not wasting energy. It's all top-down Fabian socialist fascism. Call it what you want. H.G. Wells called it the open conspiracy. We also have major army exercises in Townsville, Australia. That's coming from the abc.net.au out of Australia. Red light cameras spark debate in Texas cities. More on that from dallasnews.com. We, of course, have noted that Arizona just got rid of some of their speed cameras, CCTV spy red light cameras, that, of course, are run by folks like Lockheed, which have been busted dialing down the yellow time to get more money and also make more of us dead. Illinois town wants to outlaw eye rolling, if you can believe that. More on that from consumerist.com. And our last note from Toronto Sun. Woman mocked and humiliated during a Vancouver airport strip search. This happening, swirling all around the Christmas Day underpants bomber. The Mutalab story that has been fully debunked as some sort of intelligence operation with a handler. The well-dressed man, attorney Kurt Haskell, breaking the story from the very beginning. We've noted he was shepherded every step of the way, and that there was also, on that same airline, the same day, and the same route, or at least the same departure, there was another similar operation. That was the guy who yelled jibber-jabber about Islam. That story went down the memory hole. That got conflated with Mutalab. It appears as though there were some sort of drills going on with patsies being involved, who don't always know they're part of an operation. Maybe they think they're doing it for the jihad. However, maybe the paymasters for their quote-unquote jihad is again coming from things like Operation Cyclone, where we fund our opposition. The enemy of my enemy is my friend, and other such geopolitical grand chessboard Malthusianism from our misleaders with names like Rockefeller and Brzezinski and Kissinger and Gates and Astor and Schiff and Warburg and Harriman and Bush and on and on. Ay, ay, ay. And yet we have to keep powering forward, my friends. And only now do we reach another news purge. This for July 22nd, posted up yesterday. Future Pixels, we called it. And we took that from the lyrics of our opening song, Rhinestone Eyes, from Gorillaz in their latest, greatest record, Plastic Beach. And we're going to go over, this is admittedly a much shorter news purge than we have at other times. I think I tried to post some of the updates to other stories that we've already gone over. Police state updates, BioWars, EnviroHealth, Econo Crash, Obamasiah, all the subheadings you love to hate to love. We're going to go over murder and mayhem and media and memes and holy hexes and history mystery. And we're going to start on this 722 News Purge Future Pixels with geopolitics, with another viral, amazing bit of work in the information war from my man James Corbett at CorbettReport.com. Leaked G20 documents show carbon taxes still high on the globalist agenda. This posted up just yesterday, the 22nd of July, 2010, on CorbettReport.com. This week, Corbett Report was sent documents purported to be the notes of an attendee of the recent Toronto G20 meeting. The documents, if genuine, show that the recent meeting once again gave the G20 a chance to discuss global government as an answer to the ongoing economic meltdown, problem reaction solution, and reaffirm that carbon taxes are high on the globalist priority list. The notes were obtained from a source inside a South African bank whose CEO was a confirmed attendee of the Toronto G20 meeting. According to the source, they are most likely notes from a feedback session between the CEO and bank officials upon the CEO's return from the conference. Again, putting the lie to their always ridiculous notion that, oh, we don't make policy at these secret closed-door elitist globalist meetings like the G20 or Bilderberg. But they do. The scans are put up as ping files individually or put all together in a PDF from CorbettReport.com. And we'll further read that according to these documents, the delegates concluded that a process of fiscal consolidation would be the key solution to the crisis, involving country-specific ideas with central coordination, presumably by the G20 itself. Although the delegates evidently discussed the need to address the sovereign debt crisis through cutting expenses and not through increased taxes, that statement is immediately followed in this attendee's notes by the idea of introducing carbon taxes. The idea of funding a global, nascent global governmental structure through the introduction of carbon taxes is by no means a new one, having already been proposed as a funding mechanism for a North American Union, or North American Community, as the CFR likes to call it. But that links back to a secret meeting in Banff, Canada in 2006 of the Security and Prosperity Partnership. Perhaps not coincidentally, the idea was last floated in the G20 finance ministers' meeting in Scotland last year. In leaked documents from that meeting, it was revealed that attendees had seriously discussed the possibility of using a carbon tax to fund an international financial body which would supposedly be entrusted to look after climate adaptation, and mitigation programs. Climate adaptation and mitigation programs. This all ties in with geoengineering. More on that from episode 138 from CorbettReport.com. So again, the article is there. The documents are there. PDFs linked up for you. Leaked G20 documents show carbon tax high, still very high on globalist agenda. And ultimately, even if you believe in man-made global warming, what is paying a carbon indulgence to central international banksters like the Rockefellers, like J.P. Morgan, like Goldman Sachs, like Al Gore, just like Chertoff running around fear-mongering while he's selling the naked body scanners in the airports that he, of course, has a financial interest in. And ultimately, there are massive environmental crises going on, quite obviously. But again, when you look at the documents from the Club of Rome on the first global revolution, they decided that making mankind the enemy would fit the bill, again, to force this agenda. Let's tie this in with the latest article, and I again assume our clip this week from Russia Today and Webster Tarpley. This on Tarpley.net, the article, China surpasses U.S. in energy consumption while the Malthusian crackpots of the Obama regime fiddle with cap and trade. Do all those things sound familiar? Why, yes, they should.
Dead on arrival. The climate change bill is stripped of almost all of its major components, with Democratic lawmakers in the U.S. Senate saying they just don't have the votes. So what's next for the future of clean energy? Here to discuss is author and investigative journalist Webster Tarpley. Mr. Tarpley, as always, let's talk about this bill. 3:30 this afternoon, they just announced basically everything, cap and trade, all of the major components that people were looking forward to seeing from these environmental groups. This is not in here. What do you think is happening?
Well, the average person was not looking forward to this if they knew anything about it, because it amounts to a tax of about $1 trillion on productive activity. Anybody who needs oil or gasoline for heating or for driving a car, running a tractor, transporting goods, running a railway, $1 trillion on that. So this is an idea that appeals to rich elitists, like somebody like Senator Kerry, right? He's the sponsor. It's Kerry Lieberman. And if we could pronounce this dead and drive a stake through its heart, that would be a great thing, but I'm afraid not.
Majority Leader Harry Reid said, the realities of the Senate calendar and the mood of Congress before elections were sort of the main reasons why they weren't able to get the votes.
Right, and also that there's a popular revulsion against this thing, because the whole global warming theory, which it's based on, is now widely can't be discredited because of these charlatans and quackademics who were exchanging those emails. Let me just point out, though, the period of maximum danger is November, December of this year. That's the period of the lame ducks. We could say the period of the dead souls, not the dead souls of Gogol, but the dead souls of the Democratic Party, because there are going to be 30 or 40 or maybe 50 Democratic congressmen who have lost their seats. They've been repudiated by the public. They're going to be looking either to Wall Street to become a director, to become a consultant. They're going to be looking for patronage jobs in the Obama administration. And the strategy of this Obama regime is to bring in a cartload of horrendous legislation and try again in November and December to ram that through using the votes of these people who have nothing left to lose.
I will say, though, the majority leader included, a lot of these senators have said, we're just going to try for this in the next Congress. Nobody's saying anything about trying.
Watch out.
Watch out, indeed. They can get us to invest all our energy on one kind of specific fight, and we maybe win that battle. But again, they have the deep pockets and the revolving door connections, as we just mentioned there, to keep fighting and to keep ultimately, through attrition, pushing their agenda through. Let's go down the rest of the geopolitics. Ahmadinejad, always one to turn heads in the latest boogie-boogie against the axis of evil Iran, where he notes that the U.S. is behind terror attacks. And unfortunately, that statement's true. But when crazy 9/11 conspiracy theories and talk of false flag terror comes from folks like Ahmadinejad, folks, again, are more apt to slough it all off and say it's all ridiculous. A quick update on the Amiri story that we covered last week. CIA says it moved Iranian scientist and a second informant to the U.S. over safety concerns. That's from the Washington Post, and again, this gets into kidnapping of a supposed scientist, supposedly by the CIA, to supposedly get some information, and it's a big, convoluted movie of the week yet to happen. That again, you always see the ugly fingerprints of the intelligence networks. But the last couple of notes, and again, we can see this on the front of breaking news right now on this July 23rd. U.S. stealth jets and carrier to send a signal to North Korea. That's from Danger Room and from Business Week. Hillary and Gates plan Korea DMZ visit, and the carriers are arriving for Operation Invincible Spirit. Yes, we're putting on military war games in the middle of this powder keg, and we can see on the top of Google News that North Korea is threatening a physical response. Invincible spirit, indeed. We're going to move on down the news purge list and get to some interesting history mystery notes. And I don't ever really remember hearing about this. This was something I heard from Mike Rivero first years ago on whatreallyhappened.com, inciting possible outcomes for our order out of chaos here in the North American community, is that perhaps it wouldn't be some protracted, shattered Union road warrior situation, but that in the case of Romania, and yes, lots of other people died, but basically there was a popular uprising, and the dictator and his wife were overthrown and killed. That suddenly, once everybody realized that they didn't agree with what was going on, they all took action. We can't get into all that, but this is quite interesting to note from the Associated Press, Dateline, Bucharest, Romania. The mystery of where former Romanian dictator Nicolae Ceaușescu and his wife Elena were buried moved closer to resolution this last Wednesday after forensic scientists dug up their graves in hunt for DNA. Ceaușescu ruled Romania for 25 years with an iron fist before being ousted and executed during the 1989 anti-commie revolt in which more than 1,000 people died. Many Romanians have doubted for years that the Ceaușescus were really buried in the Ghencea military cemetery in West Bucharest. Still, they were shocked by the unannounced early morning exhumation, part of a 5-year lawsuit. "I never thought it would happen," said Ion Merici, 81, former engineer visiting a family grave early Wednesday. "I didn't believe the rumors he wasn't buried here, but I suppose the family must decide." Conspiracy theories have ranged from the graves being empty to the Ceausescu's bodies being spirited off by supporters and replaced in their coffins by anonymous victims of Europe's bloodiest anti-communist revolt. By the end of the day, one theory had been ruled out. Those weren't empty graves. Ex-Romanian dictator Ceausescu and wife exhumed. Again, you can do the research and look into this ousting and execution, and I will helpfully throw out the difficult spelling of Ceausescu. C-E-A-U-S-E-S-C-U. And that'll aid you in your own searches. Further down, history mystery. We go back a couple of years to, I believe, 2006 and even 2008, but new reporting from Jurian Mason shows that a top professor at a depopulation talk said that there should be no more shrouding our statements in code. Again, ultimately talking about the eugenics agenda for depopulation of the dirty masses like all of us. That's basically what Carol Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, the author of Tragedy and Hope, that folks were never really meant to read, where he had the opportunity to investigate the papers in the background of the Council on Foreign Relations and others, and he said he was all about their Fabian socialist agenda. His only disagreement was that they wanted to do it in secret and by stealth. No more shrouding our statements in code. I just saw this morning, posted it up under History Mystery on this news purge from the AP, a sister monument to Stonehenge may have been found. And under our newest subheading on the news purge, Holy Hexes, that again, we took that term from Reverend Billy on his recent protestations against J.P. Morgan and their murdering the mountaintops of West Virginia. But the couple of things we got under Holy Hexes this week, and it's worth noting, weighty guests arrive for annual Bohemian Grove. More on that from PressDemocrat.com, and yes, this weekend the Bohemian Grovers start to gather in the California Redwoods where they perform mock occult rituals, and all the movers and shakers are generally involved, whether it's Kissinger or Bob Weir of the Grateful Dead. And we, of course, always have to note that Richard Nixon noted that the Bohemian Grove was the most faggy goddamn thing you could imagine. Our other Holy Hex note, watching pop culture, country singer Sarah Evans' ex, possessed by Satan? We're not going to get into that. We're going to move on down the news purge list here and get some media memes. Of course, the new Christopher Nolan movie Inception opened last week. I did mention that I did watch Dark Knight yesterday. I guess perhaps in maybe some preparation for maybe going to see Inception. I know that with a Netflix streaming account and a Roku box, my inclination to go out to big overpriced theaters is pretty small. Of course, still like to patronize the small independent theaters, and there are some great ones here in Portland, like the Hollywood Theater. But Dr. Leonard Horowitz notes, and you may or should recall our interview with him at the recent 10th Annual Conspiracy Conference that was at the beginning of June, and we talked to Leonard Horowitz for a quick few minutes. One of his main themes and works is something called the 528 frequency. And we do want to get into this in further detail in the not-too-distant future, but basically the idea that our music is tuned incorrectly. And this incorrect tuning comes from intelligence-connected, multi-generational, serial killer think tank workshops that have made us tune and encode our music incorrectly. And he makes the analogy that, you know, if you listen to a radio that has a little bit of static, you know, it can be a little annoying. If you start to get even more static, it starts to drive you crazy. Dr. Leonard Horowitz has done a remix of the trailer for Inception, because apparently, and again, I haven't seen the film yet, Inception has the number 528 replete throughout the film. That again, we see this predictive programming, just like Clyde Lewis was talking about, sci-fi, and these new spiritual memes. Inception in the 528 frequency, that is linked up for you to go down and get more into that. And again, stay tuned for MediaMonarchy.com for more on this, as we do strive to put more media into the monarchy. The other note we add along, just as a nice little background refresher for you, thanks to BrassCheckTV.com, you should, of course, know about Edward Bernays, the father of public relations, or in this case, the assassin of democracy. I do have a degree in media studies, and we should note that the work of Edward Bernays is Communications 101. On to the murder and mayhem, my friends. We have noted and questioned and postulated that there is some type of mass murder contagion. There is a copycat effect. And we're going to start all this off with a link to another great new site that I've just discovered. And again, there's so many fantastic new sites. All kinds of people all around the world. People like you and me. You can start a website. You can start a radio show. You can start a zine. Again, as we said, once we can get people to realize that if we can create our own food and money and media, there's maybe nothing we can't do. But back to the bad stuff. Murder-suicide.blogspot.com. Further from examiner.com, murder suicides on the rise nationwide. If you thought some of the murder mayhem things I brought to you in week to week were a lot, murder suicide. .blogspot.com has a ridiculous amount that we would never want to go into. It seems constant. One strange note here, election official's body found in burning car.
Was this the scene of a random crime or something else? Was this the scene of a random crime or something else? When firefighters put out a vehicle fire on this rural road in eastern Tennessee over the weekend, they made an alarming discovery. They found the body of Jim Miller, a Republican and chairman of the local election commission, in the trunk of the vehicle. The sheriff's department isn't commenting. Instead, it's waiting for preliminary results of an autopsy to be released.
Anytime you called Jim day or night, he was there. He was that top fella. And he was that way with anybody.
James Brown is the administrator of the county's election commission.
The last time I spoke with him was approximately 12:30 to 15 to 1. It's possible that I was the last person that actually spoke to him.
Early voting has just begun for next month's local general election here, but Miller's fellow commissioners don't think politics had anything to do with his death.
He was always involved in the community with something, trying to help somebody, some cause.
As the sheriff's department continues its investigation, a search of local court records has turned up something interesting. A long history of Miller's legal disputes with his three brothers over their family's farm. Ross Simpson, The Associated Press.
Again, so many strange themes and memes and sinister forces to connect. Texas mom tells 911 she used wire to kill her two children. That's from Yahoo. Loganville man out of Atlanta, this is on MyFoxAtlanta.com, alleges police brutality after he was beaten by the cops after finding his son had committed suicide. Three arrested in Beverly Hills stabbing at a movie producer's home. More on that from KMPH.com. Sex offenders questioned in hunt for California killer. And our last note on murder-suicide, we could have put this under war horrors or could have put this under lots of other stories. But this one is kind of going down the memory hole. So here we are to remind you of a story that we did quickly report to you. Marine at the heart of the California stolen files case dies. Marine colonel accused of leaking classified information to an anti-terrorism unit of the L.A. County Sheriff's Department has died. San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department says Larry J. Richards was suffering brain, kidney, and liver problems when he died Saturday at his home in Lake Arrowhead, Los Angeles. He was 52. Richards was a Marine reservist and sheriff's detective in 03 and 04 when he allegedly helped leak Marine intel info from Camp Pendleton to an anti-terror task force that he helped organize. He was later called to active Marine duty and was awaiting a military hearing. Four other Marines have been convicted in the case. The military has not released the nature of the leaked information, and I think those four other guys would probably want to watch out and look over their shoulders. That, my friends, is the end of another massive news purge. Future Pixels. And we now just have time for an amazing story that connects to 9/11, but has all the history, mystery associations. Wooden ship from 1700s found at the World Trade Center Ground Zero. Archaeologists working at the World Trade Center site in New York have found the remains of a wooden ship apparently buried there more than 200 years ago.
An archaeologist's dream has been uncovered at the site of the former World Trade Center in New York. Workers clearing Ground Zero found a 32-foot-long ship's hull that dates back to the 18th century. One of those called in to take a look is archaeologist Elizabeth Mead.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty significant find. It's the kind of thing that archaeologists are always hoping to find in landfill deposits. It's a ship. It was probably put here around in the early 1800s. We know that this area, this whole block, was filled in between about 1790s and the 1830s. So we figure the ship probably predates that and was used as part of the landfilling process. So they filled the ship with dirt and rocks and in conjunction with timber cribbing features or landfill retaining structures on either side, sunk them to the bottom of the river and used it to create new land along the waterfront. At this point, we really don't know much. So we kind of just have to continue our analysis, see what we're, you know, what's under the boat, what's in the dirt around it, and see if that can tell us anything. We're assuming it was placed here in the early 1800s based on historic maps and how they show us how the shoreline progressed. Basically, they would just sink it little by little and gradually extend the shoreline and usually build new wharves and piers out into the river, leaving a slip in between so boats could continue to sail in and out. And then as waterfront land became more and more valuable and more necessary, they would continue filling in and extending the shoreline gradually. And it's you know, tied into commerce and trade of the early 19th century. There have been ships found in the city before. You know, there was a famous one on Water Street found in the early 1980s. And it's the kind of thing that everyone always hopes to find. You know, it's an exciting find. It's a, you know, it's a big find. It's something that's interesting. We can get a lot of information about it. It's a very unique part of history that, you know, we wouldn't have access to otherwise.
Experts say the site of the 2001 terror attacks was once that of a landfill that extended Lower Manhattan into the Hudson River. Molly McDonald is part of the excavation effort.
It was apparently somewhat common to sink ships in landfill as people were building land further out into the Hudson River and the East River, but only a handful of these ships have been found so far, so it's really quite rare.
A 100-pound anchor was found a few yards from the hull, but they're not sure if it belongs to the ship. The archaeologists hope to salvage timbers and try to piece together the age and identity of the vessel.
We came in very early on Tuesday. We got here at a little bit after 6 in the morning, and Molly noticed a curved timber, a square timber in a curved shape, sort of like a rib, and thought maybe that is from a boat. And we examined it more closely and indeed found the bottom portion of this boat in the location where they had been excavated. So this used to be the Hudson River to about where we're standing. The Hudson River extended about to Greenwich Street. They used a ship, a wooden ship that was no longer apparently functioning as a ship, as part of the landfilling episode. This was the land reclamation process that we still go through now as cities grow and evolve over time. Started off building piers and bulkheads to serve industry, and then they no longer had the need for those for trade purposes, so they filled it in, and the real estate was more valuable, so the city grew. It seems to have been an ocean traveling boat as opposed to a local river type travel, because of its double hull. It's got two layers of hull, two wooden layers separated by strong timbers. Our assumption is that the ship predates construction of the bulkhead and that it wasn't a new ship. The ship is somehow is older clearly than the bulkhead. How old is it? We don't know.
wooden ship from the 1700s found at Ground Zero. Fascinating story. Quickly, our other 9/11 updates. Ex-MI5 spy chief, of course, notes no link between Iraq and 9/11. We have additional declassified U.S. Secret Service records describing unidentified aircraft circling D.C. on 9/11. More on that from Aidan Monahan and 911blogger.com. And our final note, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is annoyed by 9/11 truth. We'll note as we glance back at Google News, as we see, again, the themes and memes, all these things going on in the Gulf, and the headlines extrapolate to all that we talk about. Storm is brewing. Let's quickly look at some of the creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. Thanks to StatCounter.com, we had the Department of Parliamentary Services out of Australia, the Department of Veteran Affairs out of Pittsburgh, Honeywell out of Morristown, New Jersey, the FDIC out of Arlington, Headquarters USAISC out of Sierra Vista, Arizona, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the U.S. House of Representatives, the Government of the District of Columbia. They Googled Peter Lavenda. The United States Centers for Disease Control out of Atlanta Googled ship found underneath Twin Towers. And finally, Adidas Portland Googled Ground Zero wooden ship. My friends, this has been another jam-packed episode of MediaMonarchy.com. If you find it useful, spread the word. Can't do this alone. That's what this is all about, sharing open source information. I thank you for listening. My name is James M. Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show at MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, reminding you, as always, to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the New World Network video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail Media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether he did not go up with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.